All right, cool. So, hello, Denim Heads, and welcome to your eighth Hangout with the Sons of Selvage podcast, the second Hangout for 2021. This is a podcast where a group of friends get together to talk about denim, menswear, and related interests. We aim for this to be a fun and inclusive podcast where you feel like you're hanging out with longtime friends, but be warned, there is a bit of banter, cutting up, and explicit language. So, in this episode, we'll go through four things. First, we'll do a bit of current interests. Next, a bit of news. Third, Q&A, so questions that you guys sent in. And then fourth, our discussion topic. For this episode, that topic is going to be why we love this hobby. Obviously, please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Give us a follow on Instagram at Sons of Selvage Podcast. And please message us with any questions or anything you'd like to talk us to talk about in the future. And on that note, let's do a quick round of introductions where we inevitably talk over each other. Anyways, hi, this is
That's how
David.
Professionals do it.
Hi, this is Zilio.
Hi, this is Andy.
Hi, this is Kevin.
Hi, this is Lex.
And this is Tom.
Awesome. All right, so let's kick it off with some current interests. I guess I can get things started. So last episode we recorded, I talked a bit about this idea of Metroidvania style video games. So basically kind of side-scrolly 2D video games that were inspired by Metroid or Castlevania. Last time I talked about Ori and Guacamelee. And I think even the same day we finished recording the episode, I finished Ori and I decided to finally take a punt on Hollow Knight, which is another really, really well-rated game in that genre. And holy shit, have I been completely blown away. I think it's probably the best 2D video game I think I've ever played since maybe like Super Metroid came out when I was a kid. Absolutely incredible. It's inspired a bit by Dark Souls. So like when your character dies, you have to like go back and fight your ghost to get your money back and get your goods back and kind of pick up where you left off. You're in this kind of really dark sort of bug world. So everything's a bug. And you're this knight and you don't know who you are or how you got there, et cetera. And the best way to describe it is if like Studio Ghibli tried to make like a side-scrolling video game. The team who does it's in Adelaide, Australia, and it's I think one person sort of hand drew all of the computer animations. So all of the characters, they look like they're kind of like cartoons on screen. So if anyone's played Cuphead, the style is kind of like that, but like really, really dark. And I think I've probably put like 60 plus hours into it. It's so good. Yeah, I mean, that's like as much as I played.
That's a lot for a side scroller.
Yeah, it's crazy because it was so popular when it came out. Like I think 3 years ago, they just kind of kept adding more parts of the world to it. And there's like all these like really bizarre bugs you meet, the different environments. There's just like so much stuff to discover. It feels like reading a novel or, you know, watching like an old like Studio Ghibli film where there's just kind of all these little bits of world building all everywhere you go. The gameplay is amazing. Like you get all these like awesome superpowers and weapons and abilities. The bosses are like super hard and really take a lot of time to kind of learn their movements and all that kind of stuff. But when you actually beat someone, it's really, really rewarding because you probably fought them like 20, 30 times before you figured out the technique to beat them. And I just was continually like playing the game. You know, a couple of days later, I get to this new area and it's just like absolutely gorgeous with these new kinds of characters and this little bit of story enough to kind of let you know sort of what's going on, but not too much where it feels like it's actually explaining itself. It kind of just lets you go where you want, find what you want, discover what you want, sort of like Zelda Breath of the Wild does. And you're just sort of on this never ending kind of journey of discovery and challenge. And it's absolutely phenomenal. I think I paid like £10 for it. And it's probably the best £10 I've ever spent in a video game. And so rumor has it that the sequel, which is called Hollow Knight Silksong, which follows the story of another character you meet, a girl bug named Hornet. That's coming out like any week now. So for me, that's an insta buy without even thinking about it. It's literally one of the best games I've ever played. I think maybe an all-time top 10.
Is it on Nintendo?
Yeah, so originally it was on Steam, then they put it on Switch. I think you can now get it on PS4 and Xbox One. And I guess with backwards compatibility, you can probably get on the new consoles too. But I think it was originally developed for Steam.
Yeah, I think it's available on different platforms. So you can get it on Windows or Mac OS as well.
Now, I think the sequel, when it does come out, I believe is going to be PC and Switch only at start. And then after it's launched, they'll add PlayStation and Xbox. So yeah, that's Hollow Knight.
Right. So since our last episode, I've been catching up on another podcast about Denim, which is the Denim Heads podcast. We've mentioned them before. So it's basically these two guys, Dariush and Pasha, who are both relatively new to the hobby. And they just basically chat to each other like we do. And they try and like navigate this whole landscape of heritage wear and raw denim. It's really good. Like I really enjoy listening to it. There's a lot of stuff that they come across that I came across when I was really new to it. So I did recognize myself in what they're talking about. It's pretty funny to see that happen, obviously. It's really good. I would highly recommend. It's all of the episodes are really short, so which is nice as well. I normally listen to them on my morning runs. So it's a little bit just easier to just quickly put on in the morning. Has anyone else listened to them?
No, not yet.
But it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on my list of lessons.
Yeah, I've ducked into a couple of the episodes because I know Obviously Blue, who's one of the hosts, he really does a lot to sort of big up our podcast and support us. So I've been trying to kind of jump into the different episodes as they come up. I realized they actually record quite frequently, which is impressive. I think they're already at 12 episodes or more, and they started about the same time we did. So kudos to those guys for quantity.
Exactly. Yeah, they try and record an episode every week.
Really impressive.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a bit harder for us, obviously, being sick and organizing that.
And time zones.
and time zones as well. Yep.
Actually, we can make the six argument, but we can't make the time zone argument. So I believe one of the dudes is in Zurich and one of the dudes is in New York City.
In New York, yeah. So they have the same same issue.
Yeah, no excuses, guys.
what we can use one excuse. You know, six people is definitely a challenge, especially with like moving house and all that kind of stuff going on.
I can go. Why not? Nay. Bought a very nice freewheelers jacket the other day, which was from Marked. Ilya's shaking his head. As soon as I saw it, I was like, "Whoa, God, it's a tough one. Oh, I really want it, but do I need another denim jacket?"
You did the right thing.
Yeah. Hands down, so happy with it. It's quite like a fairly lighter fabric than what you'd probably find on like Type 2s, Type 3s, something like that. So it feels more like kind of the three pleat blouse from LVC. But all the details are phenomenal. It's absolutely great. So that's been like constantly been wearing that out, you know, when it's warmish enough for it, obviously not when it's snowing. Outside of that, I made this lovely denim party hat for a Zoom call, which looks more like a gnome hat. I tried to do some nice kind of swirly Western stitching on there, but you probably can't see it in the light, and for those listening, you can't see it anyway. So
is it selvedge?
No, I didn't use any selvedge on it. I wouldn't really know where the selvedge would go on my hat.
But it is it's Hewitt
go on the tip
fabric.
Just a little tip of white selvedge. Little tip, yeah. I could have done. Maybe for my next one, I'll make one each for all of you.
Ooh.
And then we'll offer one as a prize to listeners. That'd be a great idea. It's spare Hewitt.
We should make like little fez type hats, like, you know, those kind of like Shriners clubs and weird kind of like secret societies in the States. Little denim fez.
The little dangly bit that's just all selvedge. That'd be, yeah, we'll do that.
That could be our first merch.
Yes.
Petals is going to wish they thought of that.
So who wouldn't want one of those?
I know, yeah, God, yeah. It'll be the new Triumph watch. They'll be in H&M soon and everything, like in the Lee H&M collab.
We can even like heckle David Shook with like a kind of a thematic TV commercial like they do on their podcast. It's like, I don't know where to take that. I'm too hungover. Never mind. I'll edit that out.
David is not with it today. Oh, yeah, then I went cycling yesterday and found I'm wearing a nice little ventilation hole around the old bobby. So I might have to stitch that up sometime today so that I don't bend over and flash my gonads to anyone.
At least it keeps you fresh.
Mm, yeah, it helped on the cycle, I must admit, because I was
can imagine
sweating as. We cycled all the way up to Greenwich just to get out of the house and do something a bit different than just walking at the weekend, because still locked down.
Ironically, I got on the bike yesterday for the first time in over a year. We went for a cycle, and I have to give a big shout out to Outlier. It's a company in New York City that makes like technical garments, but they do... Basically, they call them dungarees, but they basically do like a five-pocket jean made out of shoulder technical fabric that looks like a pair of black jeans or a pair of like navy jeans. But they're essentially bulletproof and really good for not getting all sweaty. So when I bike commute, I just cycle in those as opposed to like cycling in my denim and just leave my good jeans at the office. And they're not too much more. They're about the same price, I guess, as a pair of good jeans. But I highly recommend them if you need... If you want to like have something like a five pocket jean, but you don't want to cycle in your jeans.
Nice, good shout. I also cycled in my Thorough boots, which was quite nice, surprisingly. They're kind of low enough in the height that they just sit at the ankle joint. So pretty easy to cycle in those, which I always found like Red Wings because they sit that bit higher. You don't get that same flexibility in them.
If you're going to cycle in your jeans, you might as well go snow skiing in them too.
Yeah, why not do the whole Swiss Jeans Freak experience? You know?
Andy, gotta wear five pairs though at the same time.
Andy, what have you been up to?
I might also not be with it because I've been up since 4:30 because of my little kid deciding that he wanted to wake up then and my wife desperately needing a lion. So it's been great fun. So for me, I have also picked up a couple of items. I sold a few bits and bobs on eBay and Marked recently. Sold a couple of pairs of boots, a pair of Red Wing Iron Rangers and Wolverine 1,000 Miles. And then I also sold my 316 Classic Tapers on eBay, as well as my Ironheart 634 Double Indigos. Because ultimately, they just none of the pairs were really working for me anymore. And as a result, I replaced them all. So boot-wise, I picked up... I actually bought them last year during the kind of whole Thanksgiving Black Friday sales that were going on. I got a pair of white MP Shermans with the half sole in cinnamon waxed flesh. So they arrived a few weeks ago and have really been off my feet since. They're so comfy, man. Straight out of the bat, no real need to break in, just get them on and start stomping around in them. So they're well worth the money. And they came once they were shipped, they were over within within about a week. So that was really good. And then I picked up a pair of Stevenson jeans. I got the 120 OSS, the black pair.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, they're lovely. Yeah, super comfy, really kind of actually quite a generous fit. I kind of sized at my lower end of my sizing and actually they've got loads of space on them, which is great. So yeah, they've been out and about. The only problem with black jeans is that they pick up fluff. And in a house where you've got a cat and a child crawling around, leaving dirt everywhere, yeah, they get really fluffy very quickly. But yeah, amazing pair of jeans. There's a couple of other items on their way, but I won't talk about them until they arrive. So that'll be the next episode. And then the other thing I've been doing to keep myself busy is I signed up to the Savage Shred program by a guy called Bill Esch, who is known on Instagram as the Kettlebell Warrior. He is America's either the first or the only person within the whole kettlebell sport in America, on the male side anyway, to achieve, I think it's MSIC quality, basically seen as like a master in the sport. He's competed, and he competes at quite a high level. Pressing him in the air for 10 minutes straight. But the actual exercises are great, and his program is really, really good. So I've been following that as close as I can. Currently I've seen no change because I've started drinking beer again. So it's kind of cancelled it out. But yeah, that's been me. Lex?
All right. I will jump in quickly. I mean, to be honest, since we last recorded in early January, not that much exciting has happened denim-wise, because I got a promotion at work. So I'm now course leader on the MA Pattern and Garment Technology course.
Nice.
Yeah. Congrats. So
congrats.
Going up in the world. And my girlfriend and I have been house hunting, which I haven't bought anywhere yet. But that's kind of taken up all my time. So not that much exciting has happened. The one thing, though, was so Sebastian, who was part of the Worn Out Global crew and has now moved to Germany, sent me over some jeans to mend. So I did a bit of darning for him. I think he'd had them. His local tailor in Germany had done a really bad job at them. So I had to spend ages unpicking all of this horrible stitching and then re-go over it, which I think he was pleased with. And that's been...
I saw those. They look really good now.
Yeah. They put some weird black fabric beneath it, and then
okay.
I think they.
Oh, I've had that.
Yeah, and then they darned it in. I think they've got. I don't know how they got the holes in, but they're quite dark at the time, so they darned it in a really dark thread. So when the jeans faded, you then had these really kind of almost black threads on. So I just kind of darned it in a lighter. Light on, but I've got an order of indigo thread coming, so I can darn stuff actually in indigo, which will hopefully fade with the jeans.
Nice, cool. Very cool.
But it will be, so it'll kind of be dark, but then obviously because it's where it wears, it'll hopefully fade. So I think that'll be interesting for the darning anyway. But I've got that on order, but it's going to be a few weeks before it comes through. But that's been about it with me. Who else to go? Ilya, you're next, aren't you?
Yeah. So since the last episode, what have I been up to? I think the main thing is I've done a little project with Mike of Wild Frontier Goods, and we decided to do a second belt collaboration between us. And so this one is called Amai Mind State, and it refers to Amai being something sweet in Japanese, and the mind state kind of refers to the De La Soul album, which we're both big fans of. So that's the reason for the name. As for the belt itself, it's a chocolate glazed Japanese vegetable tan leather from Shonan. And it's the color variation is very beautiful. It goes from dark to lighter shades. And yeah, it's just really gorgeous to look at. That's a couple of days away from myself receiving it, and I know also Andy's anticipating one. That's been a little mini project which has been fun to put together with Mike, and I knowing and seeing Mike's work over the last couple of years, I know he's banged out the park as per usual, and I'm really excited to get my hands on the belt and for everyone else as well. I think there's only about 8 left, so it's a limited edition kind of thing. But yeah, very very excited about it.
Nice. What is the what's the process you've gone through in terms of collaborating with him?
So
we
talked about what kind of leather we're going to go for this time. Last time it was a natural color, so mm-hmm. This time we wanted to do something a little bit different. So yeah, I guess it starts with picking what leather we're going to go for, And then just little design bits, like what buckle to use this time around, what holes for the belt, yeah, just things like that. What stitch color? So the stitch color is going to be like a tobacco-y thread. So that's going to play nicely. It's like a toffee, sorry. So that's going to play nicely with the leather itself.
Yeah, right. That's cool.
Yeah, just bouncing ideas off each other and, you know, seeing what sticks and what we both like.
So Tom, Andy, myself, and our friend Ben are all into Warhammer. Some of us are newer to it than others, like myself. I'm quite new to it. We had this pretty cool idea to buy these blind boxes where you get a box, it's got one of six figures in it. You don't know which one it's going to be. And you open it and you get a particular Warhammer soldier from the particular army is called the Death Guard. And we each got one, and Andy actually gifted me one. So huge thank you, Andy. I owe you a miniature. And we basically kind of did like a little bit of a painting contest. So we each took our own approach to like painting our dude. I kind of went for like neon. Tom's is like really kind of hyper realistic. Andy's is like super, super gritty. And our friend Ben's is kind of crazy in terms of his color choices. So we've each kind of taken our own approach to how our dudes look. And when we're all said and done, we're going to like share some pictures of our dudes. So I know Warhammer isn't necessarily it's not denim and boots and that kind of stuff, but maybe we'll share some pictures of our finished dudes on the Instagram for anyone who's also into a bit of geek culture.
I think Ilya's locked off. Where's he gone?
I will not be tuning into that post, but no, that's fair enough. You guys got your thing, and I will have a look at your figures that you've carefully painted up.
Is there any, and Andy and Tom, you guys know the lore, is there any miniatures that have like kind of a big beard and a bald head and glasses that we could like paint to look like Ilya?
In fact, oh no, he's not bald. I've got one floating around somewhere. He's actually balding. It's more of a skullet. But he has a big beard. Let's see if I can pull him out of my little box of tricks.
We should totally paint up an Ilya soldier.
Yeah. I just put some green stuff on a bald dude's head and make it look thin. Right, where is he? This must be the most interesting thing for people.
Paint his trousers in blue.
In the box. But...
Yes.
Hello.
Yeah,
little coat, yeah, and he's got a big stick for hitting things.
That's like a Bugs Rixon. Yeah.
I think fine, mate. It's Mr. Freedom. It's based on a really kind of rare frontier vibe coat with half beaver pelt.
The 40K collection.
1940s K. Awesome. Be funny if we actually make this happen.
The only other thing I'd like to add is I've recently started a little photography page on Instagram called Actual Origins, and I've been taking some pictures of some friends and some acquaintances. I recently did a shoot with Ed Anthony, who was previously known as Peg Vintage, now is Stanford Vintage. So we did like an Arctic gear with his B7 and other kit down on the Isle of Dogs whilst it was snowing. So that was quite a fun thing to do. And it's just been quite a nice outlet to do something creative in lockdown while still being kind of socially distancing, because you don't need to be that close up to people to take photos. So yeah, that's been quite fun.
Looked really good, man. Beautiful shots. Really
thank
nice.
You. Thank you.
And good.
Yeah, the ones in the snow are fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully when we were all allowed out again, it would be nice to document some of the hangs this summer.
Well, an idea just came to mind. So we talked a bit about Sebastian and we talked a bit about Ed. And I know we've talked about the idea of having like guests on the podcast, a fun kind of twist on sort of, you know, podcast guests could be, instead of having industry folks, each episode we have one friend from like our Denim community on, and it's kind of a showcase on a friend each time. So like maybe we have Seb on one time, maybe we have Ed on one time, or Ben who's like doing the minis with us. Like maybe something like that could be fun to sort of have folks get to know our community.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I know Ricardo would be up for it as well. So let's organize something.
Yeah, all right. So first news item is that Heddles, one of the probably most popular blogs out there in our hobby, has launched almost like a premium service called Heddles Plus. So you can join there's two tiers. I think the lower tier is $5 a month, and then the type two or the higher tier is $10 a month. What you get with this kind of subscription, so there is obviously more Heddles content. So I'm assuming there will be certain articles released earlier, or even exclusive content just for Heddles Plus members. There's an online community with direct access to the Heddles team as well. So you can reach out to them directly and chat to them, you know, for anything you want to ask them really about denim and heritage. And the other cool, like slightly cooler stuff, which is probably what people would sign up for, is they'll have exclusive giveaways, which I think happens every month. So quite regularly. Plus they have or they're looking at adding various different discounts across the industry. So there's a 20% discount on their Heddles shop if you're a member, and with the higher tier, so the type two members will also get at the moment already 20% off at Blue and Green, Clutch Cafe, Lowercase, Telesen, Tanner Goods, American Trench, Stack Provisions, Grant Stone, and Knickerbocker. And lots of stuff will, I assume, at some point be added, but that's already a really good selection, I would say. That's basically the whole subscription. I think it looks really interesting. $5 a month is not too much. And that way you can support, as I said, one of the more popular blogs around, because they obviously I'm not sure how many people are involved, but I assume a lot of them will just do this in their own time, and there won't be much money made. So this is a great way to support something like that, I think. What do you guys think of it?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, if I think about the amount of time we spend doing this podcast, and you know, we don't really plan too much in advance. But if I look at something like the Denim History episodes I just listened to from those guys, which was an amazing series, the amount of time and effort and research and kind of organization they put into that series of like 12 podcast episodes is really, really impressive. So I almost feel like, just for the purposes of supporting that great content, it's worth being a member. It's almost like supporting someone's Patreon kind of thing, but you get some really good value out of it too. I think it's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it's a good idea. I just wish they would probably present some of their articles and interviews would be maybe a little bit less biased and less advert-like. That's probably my only kind of criticism of Heddles. I think they did provide a good service and information, but a lot of it does feel like an advert that they're putting together. So whether this will give them a little bit more, you know, freedom to do what they want rather than rely on those kind of, oh, here's a new jean out, let's put together an article on, you know, top five jeans, which are coming out this year. And having links to those retailers, it'd be nicer to have a little bit more original content, I think, coming out from them. But I think, as you said, Kevin, you know, $5 a month is not that much to pay. If you're going to be buying things and using those discounts, it'll probably pay back.
Yeah, I'd certainly agree with Ilya. Like, sometimes it's felt some of the articles, like, I've known a gene has been out for like 3 or 4 years. And they're like, oh, there's this new gene at this shop. It's like, well, it's new at that shop. But, you know, it's been out there for like 3 or 4 years. So that's always sometimes baffled me. And, you know, I guess there's some, you know, a certain shop has put it forward as something they'd like on the website. But yeah, I mean, I think it's quite a good thing. It's not something that I would particularly maybe be interested in signing up to, but I think if you're super in the hobby and someone who certainly shops at all these shops a lot, you know, it'd probably make itself back if you're buying quite regularly from these shops. So and the giveaways seem really good. I think the first one was a Tellison coverall jacket, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was indeed. Yeah, it's a good start.
Yeah, and then I think they done an interview with the Denim Dudes lady, Amy Leverton.
Amy Leverton, yeah.
So, yeah, I think, you know, it's probably early days to say, you know, the whole kind of breadth of what it will offer to customers in the future, or, you know, people signing up to the service. But it certainly seems like they've hit the ground running and are really showing that there's kind of a lot of positives to sign up to it. So, yeah, fingers crossed. Man. Sounds really good.
Yeah, my understanding is that some of the monetization of, like, Heddles historically has been about these kind of like sponsored articles and kind of like almost like advertising style posts. So this might just be the evolution of like what's worked, what didn't work, and kind of their new approach to monetizing their service.
All right. Next thing on the list is that we have, I thought it was quite a big announcement where Rogue Territory announced that they are moving away from seasonal collections and are going to do more capsule collections going forward. Very interesting. Obviously, I guess within our, like within the heritage movement and denim industry, it is already kind of like focused on more of like a longevity kind of thing. It's not necessarily all seasonal. And we will talk about this later as well. But I guess part of the love for this hobby is because you can wear certain items for 10 years if you take care of them well. So yeah, I thought it was a really interesting move.
I think it's a positive because it means that, you know, they're not rushing to get out, you know, a short sleeve shirt for spring summer, and they can just release that whenever they want if that's their bag. It just means they're not working to some kind of schedule, which is forcing them to produce stuff which they might not necessarily have done otherwise. I think a lot of small brands are kind of inclined that way anyway, but I think previously they probably felt pressured to do that sort of thing. So I think it's a positive for them, and hopefully it will mean that they will just, you know, release the stuff that they're really passionate about when they're making it, rather than waiting for a specific time.
I think a good corollary of that too is if they're no longer chasing the need to like have different stuff each season, they can focus more on kind of keeping old favorites around. So there's been many times where it's like, oh man, they had that great jumper shirt, or like they did that cool camo shirt. And because they need to change each season, they've like gone and done different stuff as opposed to keeping these like really nice ones around. So I think, yeah, I'm quite excited to see like what they choose to make if they're no longer trying to always change, but rather just kind of focus on what they like most or what sells best. Like they did a pea coat a couple years ago, like a wax canvas pea coat. I really wanted it and I didn't get it, like a single-breasted one. More like a single-breasted trench coat. And I really, really hope they bring that back.
It almost allows them to experiment more because you don't have kind of the standard stuff that you need the seasonal stuff to kind of work with. You can just be like, oh, this is its own capsule. It's, you know, we've got this certain vibe with it. It doesn't have to work with anything else we've made. So, you know, they could just go absolutely crazy with stuff, which is quite nice. And I think kind of that's, I feel like, where a lot of brands will kind of move towards. I think now with kind of the amount of information we have on different brands, you know, we know all the collections, we know all the kind of standards, kind of, you know, if you're talking about 10 years ago, you wouldn't have known the whole of Studio Artisans lines, for example. So, you know, one piece of line comes through and everyone goes, oh, God, yeah, this is crazy. But now everyone knows that. So, you know, you've got to kind of push the boundaries and do something a little bit more experimental and different to get people's eyes on your brand. So, I think it'll work quite nicely for them.
Probably actually better for the factories too, huh? Because they can then go to the factories with bigger production orders instead of saying like, I need to make 20 of this thing for this season and then 20 of a different color next season. I can make 40 of one color, season agnostic. So it's probably actually easier for these brands to get factory time if they do like a single run, but higher quantities.
Yeah, it can make stuff off season as well. So you're not, you know, competing with other companies to get stuff made.
Well, I don't necessarily think it's going to, they might not make more of something just because it's a capsule. They might still do it in the same quantities. They are just not, you know, it's not going to be summer. It's not going to be spring. It's not going to be winter. It's just going to be a capsule. So they still might have the one-offs and things that might not reappear. It's just they're not working towards that, you know, that normal kind of fashion spring, summer, winter collections all year round. So it'd be interesting to see how they do it.
It allows them to go at their pace as well. So they can, they might only decide to release two capsules in a year instead of, you know, what effectively is four collections, because spring, summer and autumn, winter are always broken down into like two drops with most brands. So it means they can slow down. Or if they want to ramp up, they have that freedom. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do. And I know we were talking about their old favourites, you know, so things like the supply jacket and the jumper shirts and kind of like the Stanton jeans and stuff. It'll be interesting to see how some of the core elements are the kind of core items are impacted. Are we going to see some of them disappear, or are they only going to really appear during in specific capsules? You know, or are they just going to actually keep them running continuously in the background? It would just be interesting what the guys do.
I reckon they will have their core basics and then they will add those capsules on top and do it that way. Which kind of also leads us into the next topic of 316 and their new lookbook, which I think I could say that probably none of us are really big fans of. Am I right?
Not really, no.
Maybe the tan really. Mechanic shirt, but that's really there.
Yeah, it seems like they're steadily being moving away from what they stood for a couple of years ago. And, you know, I'm not mad at them at changing. That's fine if that's the direction that they want to go for. But I think they've probably alienated a lot of their core fans with the last few collections. How do you feel about it, David?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So I really kind of like a lot of the modern stuff, and I'm a pretty big 316 fanboy. And I can see an interesting evolution of their brand and also RGT as well, in that both companies kind of started out almost as like skater influenced brands. So like, you know, 316's first couple of years was just like silkscreen t-shirts, right? Like kind of like hip, like sort of streetwear stuff. And RGT, Carl came from like a skater background, and they both kind of shifted into, I guess kind of the more heritage raw denim, but a contemporary take on it, which really resonates well with me. I love that modern look. But with like fabrics that age. Tom, you're killing me with that picture. And then it's interesting because Carl explored the RGTA approach, which is trying to kind of like go more streetwear. And I feel like with 316's two recent collections, they've kind of gone more for like Studio Nicholson, Margaret Howell, sort of that kind of like slightly more loose, hyper modern, but still a well-crafted look, which I'm guessing will bring them some new customers that they didn't have before. But at the same time, someone that's more into the kind of heritage style is probably going to only gravitate towards the specific things that kind of still feel heritage. And so maybe their strategy is like, okay, let's tap into the more kind of like, you know, normcore modern style folks, and maybe sell them a bit of raw denim as well, as opposed to the other way around. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I definitely, nothing from their new collection really stuck out in my mind.
What about that giraffe print shirt, mate? No, it's not doing it for you?
It's not neon.
You know,
it was neon yellow.
Yeah.
I love camo. I mean, actually, I've always had this like weird obsession with camo, but it's like really, it's like basically the only prints I can get behind is camo. Or like Webesh. Like I can't really do prints or like patterns otherwise. Certainly not leopard print. My girlfriend's got a great leopard print dress, but not for me. So yeah, I don't know. I scanned that lookbook and it just didn't jump out at me. I guess Lex, given that you kind of got that pattern making background, was there anything interesting from kind of a technical standpoint in that collection?
I don't think so. I'm just looking at it now. I mean, I don't mind it. It's obviously different to the type of thing that we're used to wearing. But I think they've probably just done it because what we do is so niche. They've realized if they start selling slightly more kind of quote unquote fashion clothes, they open themselves up to a bigger audience. And you can see this sort of thing being a lot more commercial with the kind of ASOS Topshop crowd, as opposed to raw denim heritage type twos, that really classic. I don't think it's particularly technical, but it looks reasonably nicely made, reasonably stylish. I actually don't mind the giraffe shirt. I quite like the fact they've got the matching shorts as well. So I might
next hang, Lex, you've got to be that giraffe shirt.
That might be my suit.
My look for the summer is an all-in-one giraffe outfit. And, it's all right.
I said you got the height for it as well. So.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my new look. Maybe I'll start a splinter group, UK giraffe outfit hangs.
Yeah, a couple of my colleagues who are like in their 20s are really into that kind of like Studio Nicholson, Margaret Howell kind of like loose-fitting sort of modern aesthetic. And apparently it's going gangbusters. Like apparently that look is just selling like crazy. So I'm guessing maybe they're trying to tap into that customer segment.
Definitely. And there's definitely an influence from Japan and those kind of brands like Visvim. And, you know, we know that the owners are fans of that look. So it's not surprising that they've gone that way. So yeah, I'd expect them to crank it up even more going forward.
Trouble is now I can't see any USP in that lookbook. Like that would be indistinguishable if you put it next to a H&M lookbook, you know, a Topshop lookbook, you know, at least kind of with some other brands like Visvim, they do some really like out there pieces, which may not be the whole collection. It's completely out there, but you've got those one or two pieces that will kind of bring people's interest in their life. Oh, that jumper is super, super out there. It might not quite be my style and I might not quite afford that, you know, piece, but I might get, you know, one of their standard pieces because I'm really invested in that brand. But from that lookbook, there's not single outstanding piece apart from maybe the giraffe print for Lex. You know, there's no outstanding piece that either has an interest in fabric, has an interest in design or shape. It's just standard high street stuff. And I don't know whether gone.
Yeah. So one thing that comes to mind is like you mentioned brands like Visvim and stuff. I was thinking quickly about Yucatan. And I never really was into Yucatan because I was like, oh, they're just, you know, main style, like New England style moccasins, right? And to me, indistinguishable from any other New England style moccasins if you don't look very close. But I was listening to the Stitch Down podcast and they were talking about from a construction standpoint, what makes them really stand out. And it's like, oh, they got steel shanks and they've got this and they've got that. So it's not just a New England moccasin. So I wonder if 316's approach is to say they're going to go for that kind of modern contemporary silhouette, but maybe they're going to push the quality and the construction details so that like it won't stand out based upon its look, but maybe if you kind of, it'll stand out from a quality standpoint and like a makesmanship. I don't know. Because I also know that they're...
Go ahead. I think you're right, David. I think they will try to utilize what they've learned from, you know, what they've been doing the past years and using still good fabrics, you know, sourced from Italy or Japan or USA, and just try to bring that to that high street style or a street style or normcore, whatever you want to, you know, call it. So yeah, I think you're definitely right on that point.
One last bit I'd add, Andrew and Johan, if you guys are listening, I love your brand and what you guys have done, but please, please stop making unsanforized shirts. I've had a couple of shirts now where I bought a medium and I washed them, they turned into a small and I had to sell them. Like, I think with jeans, it's a bit more predictable, but I hope they move away from unsanforized shirting fabrics or shrink to fit shirting fabrics. Should talk a bit about Roy Denham, the legend, one man band from Oakland, and deciding to close up his shop and sell his workshop to another.
So I think this has been on the cards for a while. I saw him post about it probably a year ago or maybe even more than that. So he was trying to find someone to buy the whole lot. I think he just got to my knowledge to the point where he's just tired of making jeans all the time. Does anyone else know why he sold up? No. So my knowledge is just, I think, I guess, had enough of it. I mean, I obviously know because making jeans, it's actually pretty kind of quite physical work, like obviously not like lifting stuff, but spending your whole day kind of crouched over a sewing machine. I only do it for like a little bit at a time, but if you're doing it 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, or probably longer, it's really bad for your back, and it's actually quite knackering. So I'm guessing you got tired of it. But does also, the other one is, I want to know who bought up all his equipment, because he had an amazing workshop, some like incredibly rare machines. Has anyone heard who bought up all the equipment?
I have a theory, and that my theory has been Bepiana, just because he's in North America and Canada specifically, and the machines would work without any kind of like transformers and stuff. So that's my theory. No evidence, but it would also be cool if our buddy Mostyn bought it all up and kind of set up like a bigger version of his studio that he's got in London. He's already got a bunch of crazy machines. Or even if you bought it, Lex, and just didn't tell us.
No, Who bought it?
A company called Field Denim's getting an upgrade.
It could. I doubt it's Mosin, because the thing is, he's setting up his new studio. I think he set it up now, actually, just outside London.
Crawley, I think.
Yeah, it's down in Crawley in Sussex. And I know he's got so many machines. And Ben Villapiano's got something like 50 plus machines as well. So they're two people I think probably already have better or as good machine collections as Roy.
Another good theory.
You never know, they might want to double up.
Another good theory could be Shaco Atelier in Richmond, Virginia, because I know it's kind of a craft scale jeans maker, like father, son, and I think maybe somewhere in the order of like 10 or so machinists, really similar in size to Black Horse Lane Atelier in London. So I don't know, maybe Shaco picked it up to kind of like expand their operations a bit, increase their craft scale, but I'm quite excited to see where it's gone.
I imagine with kind of the breadth of people that know Roy Denham and his infamy, you know, there might have been people from Japan hitting him up. You know, obviously like the London guys as well. I know Rudy from Son of a Stag is an avid collector, and he often gets shipments from America and all kinds of places for machines. So, you know, I wouldn't really be surprised if it went to, you know, 10, 15 different people, you know, just kind of splitting off everywhere.
Or also if it's someone who just wants to set up a denim brand, you know, getting all the machines, it took, like, I haven't got nearly as big a collection as that. And it took me years, just especially in the UK, finding these unusual machines. You can't just, if you want to do that, set up a shop. It takes years of research and finding a machine. So if someone has had this idea of wanting to start a denim brand. If they've got the money, they could, I have no idea how much he sold it for, $50,000, $100,000, whatever, probably more. If you've got the money, just throw it at Roy. You've got all of the patterns you need. You've got mountains of fabric. You'll have all the equipment. It's just basically ready to go. You just need a bit of expertise. So it'll be interesting to find out if anyone listening knows, or if it's you who's bought all the machinery, drop us a message at Sons of Selvage. So yeah, it'd be good to find out.
On that note, you mentioned kind of how hard it is effort-wise to make jeans, Lex. And I was just thinking about our buddy Mike, who's starting up a brand called Marble Arch Clothing. Folks should check him out on Instagram. And just this past week, he did an Instagram story sequence where he basically showed how him and his brother had started up their denim brand in America. I think it was called Norman Porter.
Yeah,
and like how they scaled that brand up. And then he like moved to the UK, leaving Philly, and sort of now setting up his new brand, Marble Arch. And I thought his sort of narrative through those story posts was really cool. It's kind of like, this is hard making jeans. This is how he scaled it. It was always hard and a lot of tough work. And here's how we're kind of doing a new thing. So folks should definitely check that out if they want to kind of see a bit more of a glimpse into what it takes to scale a brand. And hopefully we can have Mike speak to his brand on the podcast soon.
Yeah, I definitely think he'd be someone good to get onto the podcast. So that's definitely a good shout for the near future. Should we move on? We had one more bit of news, didn't we? What was that?
Yeah, Oi Polloi being acquired by JD Sports.
And the Hip Store.
And the Hip Store as well.
Which those guys are in, was it Sheffield? They were based?
Nottingham?
No. Yeah, maybe.
Yes, I guess since a lot of our listeners are North America based, I think JD Sports seems like they're kind of equivalent to like a Foot Locker. Is that right? Would you guys kind of say they're like Foot Locker?
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
And they bought up Oi Polloi, which I believe started in Manchester, I think. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
It has always been kind of that UK unique approach to street style. So, you know, a bit kind of workwear, a bit kind of like, you know, barracudas and classic like UK looks, and a bit kind of kind of street wear as well. And Oi Polloi had this really cool kind of curated approach to that, this very like Mancunian specific kind of style that really developed a cult status. And then they eventually like launched the Oi Polloi shop in London, and that went over really well, et cetera. They've now just been bought up. And I don't know, can someone speak to the Hip Store? Because I actually don't know those guys.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, they're a similar kind of vein to Oi Polloi. You know, they'll do brands like Red Wing. I knew my mind would go blank as soon as I thought about it.
Beams, Chippewa, yeah.
So yeah, kind of that middle of the line, you know, between streetwear, workwear, you know, good quality, you know, not super, super premium, certainly, you know, accessible items. Similar vein to Oi Polloi, basically. But yeah, they also got bought up by JD Sport, which is quite interesting. Hopefully it will mean, you know, they've got more resources to, you know, buy into unique brands and bring them out and, you know, hopefully expand their e-commerce. It'd be interesting to see what happens to them both.
It's interesting because there seems to be a trend happening it's maybe not obvious yet, but it's going to probably be obvious before long. So we saw Supreme get acquired by North Face. We saw In Clothing, I think they got acquired. I don't remember, we covered this a couple months ago, but In Clothing had a big financial change.
They went on the stock market, didn't they?
No, was that what it was, a public offering?
Bought up by investors or something?
Yeah.
Pretty sure it was that.
Yeah, and then now Oi Polloi. So there seems to be this kind of thing about the edge of streetwear, not like hardcore streetwear, but like kind of on the periphery of streetwear. Although I guess you could say Supreme's hardcore streetwear, but these brands are getting bought up by bigger companies. And I wonder if that means that look is growing. I wonder if that means that the kind of heritage piece of it is becoming bigger. I guess ultimately what I'm wondering is, is that like an early stage indicator of change happening to the kind of heritage workwear space, or is it very much just going to stay in the kind of streetwear area of things?
I think it'll trickle into here.
I guess you have to watch this space and see what happens.
Yeah, maybe we'll see. I think they'll be targeting maybe some of the bigger brands. So you might see brands kind of at the level of maybe, you know, APC, which also ties in on the streetwear aspect, Nudie or Edwin, you know, those kind of brands. I mean, they're the ones that I think they would... The investors would be interested in more, because they are ultimately a lot more, you know, they'll make a lot more money than, say, you know, CSF. That's what they're going to target for. I think some of the older Japanese brands will resist it, and they might steer clear from them. But I think some of the more American and European focused brands, they're the ones they'll target.
Yeah, and I think certainly kind of it seems like e-commerce is the thing that they're investing the most in. You know, HitStore and iFloyd both have online stores. So if they've got that big online presence, then that's something that they'll be looking for. So, you know, the Japanese brands, they don't do as much online, and it's hard to translate Japanese over to English on computers. So I don't think we'll be seeing much of them. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if brands like 316, you know, got invested in, especially now that they're
on
core. You know, if they said tomorrow, oh, we've got investment, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. And I think kind of a lot of boot brands, that's something that's probably not going to be invested in as much, because again, that's hard to translate onto online. You know, you can buy boots online, but it's, you know, a little bit of a longer process. You know, some brands like to have, you know, pictures of your feet or drawings of your feet sent in, you know, especially for the more custom brands. Oh, David's showing his feet to the camera. Very nice.
Oh.
I think we've joined his OnlyFans. Oh, you're salvage. Okay.
sitting on the floor.
But yeah, certainly any shops that kind of sit on that divide between streetwear, workwear, good quality stuff, and, you know, and they have that e-commerce base behind them. I mean, certainly End's online store is humongous. And you can go through their store for days and days and see all kinds of things. So yeah, I would say that's kind of where the trend on all those big companies investing is.
One more related bit, I guess you can call it news, or you can just call it maybe an extension of this conversation. But I've talked before a couple of times about a continuous lean. So that's, it used to be a blog by a dude named Michael Williams. And he probably kicked it off kind of like early to mid 2000s. So like when the whole Americana heritage workwear thing was like just kicking off again. So like J. Crew had just launched the liquor shop. You know, they were starting to carry Alden and Red Wing. And basically in the States, we were all kind of like rediscovering all these great heritage brands that had only really been kind of remembered by like our dads and grandpas. I just want to quickly mention that Michael Williams, or A Continuous Lean, has just launched a podcast, and it's super good. He talks with some of the folks from J. Crew when that whole thing first kicked off. He talks about the pop-up flea shops that he ran in London and New York and things like that in California. So just a quick mention that that's a fantastic podcast if you want a bit more of the history of kind of the revival of this scene in the early 2000s. Awesome. Should we jump over to Q&A or?
Let's do it.
Cool. All right. So I'll read off the first question. So we've got from Mr. Robert Selvage. Do you guys have lighter wash jeans in your rotation? What do you think about them and how are they made? So spoke to Robert a bit on Instagram. I think he was speaking kind of about two different questions. One is sort of like jeans that are faded down, washed down, and also simply jeans that are just raw but less dark. So I don't know if folks have any thoughts on that.
Well, I'll start. I haven't bought any washed jeans for, I don't know, probably about 10 years now. Not planning to. Do I have any jeans in my rotation? Yes, I've got a pair of Warehouse 700 C's, which I've worn for 11 months. And come summer, I'll be probably wearing them a little bit more. But at the moment, I'm concentrating on my TCBs, which has just had their third wash. So they're kind of in the middle stage. So I quite like faded jeans, but these days it has to be my own pairs.
One thing I'll throw in there that's kind of a different slant on the same question is, I used to have a pair of RGT and Tanya Deneem's collaboration jeans. It was a broken twill jean that was trying to mimic the look of like a 70s Wrangler. So broken twill was quite popular in the 70s with Wrangler in particular, I think it was, because left-hand twill or right-hand twill jeans twist as you wear them, whereas a broken twill doesn't really do that. It kind of became Wrangler's USP. But for whatever reason, in the 70s, it was quite popular to dye raw denim less dark. So normally an indigo thread might go through the indigo vats 8 times, 10 times to give you that really dark blue. But something like a 70s broken twill fabric would have only gone through the indigo vats maybe 4 times or maybe 6 times. So even in its raw state, the jeans are a lot lighter. So that could be something interesting to look at is some broken twill jeans. And I know also that PBJ recently did a couple styles that one was like a gray cast, but quite light indigo jean, or another was like kind of an indigo / green cast. And in all these cases, they were like maybe dipped 4 times or 5 times, something like that for the threads. That's a great way to kind of still get the raw denim, still get your fades, but have something that starts off lighter. Is just to kind of look at the broken twills or look at the kind of recent PBJ stuff. I think Okayama Denim and most other shops were selling those.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm with Ilya. I don't have any washed or pre-washed jeans. Again, you know, it's something back in the day. But since going into kind of finding raw denim, it just doesn't really appeal to me anymore, those kind of pre-washed and pre-distressed jeans. I think the closest I've got to a lighter pair is my Kakashibu dyed Graph Zeros, but they're actually more of a tan than indigo. But I mean, they are a perfect summer weight jean. So I mean, if he's interested in something a little bit different, that is an option if he's content with something that isn't blue.
I think Samurai does like a chino that's like as thick as denim. It's like something mad, like 50, 60 ounce.
Yeah, chino or something. Didn't you have them, Ilya?
Which ones?
The Samurai chinos.
I did have those and I sold them because the rise was too low, both on the front and the back. But yeah, the fabric was fantastic. It's really heavyweight. I think it was 15 ounce. The detailing was really nice, construction was great. Yeah, it's just the fit on a pair of chinos was just too low. It should have been a lot high rise in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, in terms of jeans, I primarily buy raw. You know, I've got pairs that I have faded myself over time, but you know, it's not something that I would necessarily buy now pre-faded, you know, because you know, one of the reasons I'm into this is the environmental factors associated with pre-distressing jeans. And one of the guys from Tesson always said, like, what's the point of buying a pair of jeans that's already used and damaged? Like, why not buy a whole complete pair of jeans? You're actually getting your whole money's worth from it. I mean, you know, I've got vintage overalls that are distressed, you know, but that would have been something that had happened by whoever had worn them previously. I mean, that's as far as I would go. I don't really wear chinos. Dark jeans for me. Hoorah.
I will say though, I mean, I know you guys are talking a lot about kind of washing and processing, but I think there is definitely a growing market segment of people who just want jeans that are dyed less dark, that are still raw, limb state, you know, kind of unprocessed. And I know when I had those RGTs, I had to sell them just because the waist was too small, but I loved them because I wear a lot of black, and having a lighter jean really went well with black. And because they weren't processed in any way, I could still break them in and get fades and kind of my own fingerprint on them. So I think If you wear a lot of black as opposed to like browns and stuff, a gene that starts off less dark, still raw, but less dark is quite nice. Whereas I feel like those super dark indigos really go well with more of like the browns and tans.
Yeah, and certainly if you're in a warmer country than bonny old England, then I don't blame you if you want to wear some lighter jeans. That's no problem at all. Yeah, we get all of 1 month of nice weather here. So.
Yeah, I will say too, okay. I bought ecru denim at one point, and I'm not so sure that might have been a bit too extreme. I get made fun of whenever I wear them by my girlfriend, saying I look like a kind of like cheesy Italian, dude riding around on a moped. So I'm not sure if I would recommend ecru denim necessarily.
Kevin, do you have any pre-distressed?
Nope. No, I haven't bought any pre-distressed, pre-washed light fabric denim. Everything's dark in my wardrobe in terms of jeans.
Yeah, me too. Other than like Tom, I have a few like pair of like 1970s vintage Levi's that I wear in summer. Because as Tom said, the 1 month of sun we get, there's no way I can wear my Raws. But yeah, I wouldn't buy anything pre-washed.
It's interesting though, because almost all of you guys keep gravitating towards pre-washed, but that's only one way to make a jean lighter, right? Like, even though I've talked about the idea of just fabric that's dipped less times in indigo, we all kind of gravitate towards speaking about pre-washed, as if almost like that's kind of the more common thing. But I don't know. I feel like
it's a very niche.
It is, thing. Right?
Well, when we're talking about jeans, then, you know, the classics are going to be your dark indigo. I have no problems wearing lighter trousers in different makeups. Whether it's green fatigues or tan chinos, or I've got a pair of OE mechanics overalls coming in a white ecro style. So yeah, it's not like everything has to be dark indigo and that's it. That's not what I'm saying. But in terms of jeans, yeah, if I'm buying them, they're going to start off dark indigo or black, which I haven't bought a black pair of jeans for a number of years, but yeah, that's the way I'd go.
Awesome. So I guess jumping over to the next question, we've got from Buster the Human a question about what are our favorites from the Osaka 5. I can kick that off and say I actually have never owned anything from the Osaka 5, so I don't have a favorite.
Boo. I'll go next.
Go on, Tom. What do you reckon? I've got two, but one clear winner for me.
I mean, my kind of overall winner, just for I like everything that they've done, probably Warehouse. I don't know if that's controversial. Okay, cool.
That's the one. That's the one I would go for. I've got a few bits from Full Count, but Warehouse. I think previously we've mentioned. I mentioned that they're probably one of my favorite brands now. I think they just knock everything out of the park, what they do. Whether it's jeans, whether it's sweatshirts, chambrays,
should we just outline for people what the Osaka 5 are?
So the Osaka 5 were, the first or the big Japanese brands, which kind of started the whole movement in Japan with raw denim. And it includes the following brands, Tom.
I knew you were going to pull that. Four. I think I can remember four. Full Count, which is Mikasan. I mean, I suppose it starts with Avisu. They were kind of the first brand really out of the Cycle 5. And then Full Count, which was started by Mikasan, who worked at Avisu. Warehouse, which was started by the Warehouse Twins. Can't remember the name. They also started at Avisu. Studio Artisan and Deneem.
Yep.
Has he got it?
Yep.
Top lad.
Exactly.
I mean, my experience, obviously Avisu is Avisu. They have their very own kind of special style. Full Count, very good for denim, and they were kind of the first ones who done Zimbabwe cotton and brought that kind of into the foreground for a lot of people. But Warehouse, just everything they do is, you know, such good quality. You know, they have their sub brands, Hella's Cafe and Brown Duck Digger, and you know, their jumpers are really nice as well. Like, you know, I could fill my wardrobe with Warehouse jumpers. I would just happily wear them like all winter long.
David, I think you need to try a pair of Warehouse jeans. Something which is, you know, neppy, slubby, plenty of character, nice weight, with a classic cut, or a slimmer cut, if that's your preference. It'd be nice to see you in one of those pairs.
I have to say, actually, I saw just, I think it was a day or two ago, that Warehouse, I think it's Warehouse, that they had done what Heddles thought was the most accurate reproduction of like a 1940s World War II era Levi's 501. I think that was Warehouse, but
that was, yeah, TCB, wasn't it?
Oh, was that TCB?
I think it was TCB.
With the kind of like olive herringbone pocket bags and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might have been Warehouse, but TCB also. I mean, everyone is doing a World War II jean at the moment, so yeah, it could have been either one.
It was TCB.
Yeah, was it?
Yeah, okay. Got the article, okay, up from Heddles. Yeah, okay. Produces the 501 double X.
And they there do was, that very nice. They did the episode on the Heddles denim history where they talked to David Marks, who did the book Amatora. And I will say his description of how Warehouse worked, which I think if I remember correctly, was something to the order of like, they're not trying to kind of make any really cool kind of unique special style, but rather they're trying to do like amazing fits, amazing production, slightly modernizing bits here and there, but like really keeping it understated and just kind of focusing on pushing the fit and the quality. That definitely really resonated with me. And I thought that if I was to buy like a 40s era, 50s era jean, Warehouse is the one that sounded like it kind of spoke to me in some weird way. Yeah, I've got on right now my Tanuki regular straights, which are, you know, a regular slimness, straight leg jean in a higher rise. I think, yeah, that has kind of opened my eyes to more vintage fits. And that, something about Warehouse and the way that David Marks described it definitely spoke to me.
Yeah. Anybody else want to pick one from the five?
Yeah, it's sorry, Kevin, you're about to go.
No, go ahead, mate.
All right, mate. Yeah, I was going to say, it, for me, it's a toss-up between Warehouse and Studio Dartisan. Mainly because they're the only two from this Saka 5 that I actually have items of. I've got a Warehouse Longhorn denim shirt, which is to say Ilya's got it as well. And then I've also got a pair of Studio Dartisan Relaxed Taper 40th anniversary jeans with the charcoal weft. They're not really a relaxed taper, it's quite slim, or it is for me. But yeah, I mean, it's quite a cool modern cut. Studio Dartisan can be a bit hit and miss with some of their stuff, but
sizing's whack.
But this, when they nail it, they really do nail it. You know, those jeans are absolutely amazing. I love wearing them. And yeah, and that same with that shirt, you know, and the craftsmanship on both is kind of proper top notch and worth it. I would like to try and check out a pair of full counts at some point as well. Avisu maybe not so much. And Denim's a bit too they don't really have much of a presence over here.
Well, their stuff outside of Japan is Chinese made. They got it licensed out, so that's why you don't see it.
Fair enough.
Bought up by a lot, but some of Studio stuff is as well.
Okay,
some of their t-shirts, I think, yeah, not jeans wise, but stuff outside of their kind of main range. So a little bit careful with those. But
you're right. For me, it has to be Studio Dartisan as well. It's the only brand that I own something off out of those five. I've got a white t-shirt with a Selfridge denim pocket tee. Yeah, so again, like, very good quality t-shirt, but yeah, that's the only thing I really own out of those five. So that would be my pick. What about you, Lex?
Yeah, I'd probably agree with Andy between, or actually all of you guys, Studio the Artisan and Warehouse. Got a Studio Artisan Steerhide jacket, which is a beautiful jacket, which I never wear because it's slightly too small for me, annoyingly. But it's an absolutely gorgeous jacket, and a Warehouse plaid shirt, which I'm wearing at the moment. Again, really nice craftsmanship, really good. Generally a really good cut, but I find a neckline is ever...
You muted yourself, Lex.
Sorry, I muted myself mid-sentence then. That's very unprofessional podcasting.
Too tight.
Take two, guys.
The neckline is slightly too tight, which annoys me slightly because I generally like to do my top button up. But otherwise, it's generally a kind of a really beautifully crafted shirt and a really interesting flannel. So, I would probably go with them too.
I think if I made like an outfit up, it would be like, probably like Warehouse jeans, like the 700s or something like that. It'd be a Studio Artisan shirt, and then like a full count type too. Then that would be kind of the ultimate representation of the Osaka 5 of what we like, you know?
Yeah, good shout.
All right, so I guess jump to the next question. We've got one from Work in War. Stitch perfection or handmade perdition?
Beautiful words there. Perdition.
Yeah, quick note that if anyone hasn't seen Work in War's Instagram page, his knowledge of vintage eras, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, etc., his own clothes that he's made and his photography and stuff is amazing. Really worth checking out.
He also always looks like a serial killer in his photos, but I know that's a running joke.
Yeah, Joe has a killer stare.
Yeah, don't think he is actually wanting to find out where you live so he can murder you in your sleep. It's just...
I'm always on the border of, I would, or, I would die.
He's quite nicest smoldering. Dude. Yeah. Nicest guy in person.
Sound guy.
Yeah. I think that question might have been a typo from me. So I think it's handmade perfection. So stitch perfection or handmade perfection. And I would be in the handmade perfection group. Because I feel like, especially if it's a one-man brand making these items, I can overlook a wonky stitch here or there, knowing that the passion that's gone into making that garment. I've never been that much of a stitch counter or making sure something's perfect. That's not really me. And I think a lot of the clothing from, the decades that came before us weren't perfect. So there's not a necessity for them to be perfect now. Although you are paying good money for them and, you want things to be made really well, they don't have to be perfect in my eyes. As long as they've got some character, the things are done in the right way, those are more important to me, as well as the fabric and things like that. How about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of especially with the Japanese brands where they're trying to perfectly reproduce these old styles, these older machines will give you this almost handmade look, and there's little imperfections where the stitching slightly comes off, or it's a little bit wonky, that it's purposeful but it almost looks accidental. Especially when you look at kind of the 40s Levi's 501s, there were these imperfections where back in the day people were rushing them off the factory line, getting them done as quickly as possible for the war effort, hurrah. And the Japanese have reproduced that. So sometimes, if a piece is too perfect, almost ruins that illusion of, reproducing workwear. Even on, I think, like my Free Wheeler shirt, I can see like these little kind of where the stitching comes in a little bit. I'm definitely on the side of kind of more handmade look than anything.
I might throw in there that I think it's about expectation management. Like, I think if someone really says that, like, hey, this is about craft, it's about handmade, you should expect imperfections and stuff. versus another company saying like, hey, we try and be as hyper precise as possible with our makesmanship. I think it's just important that you know what that brand is, what their approach is, such that when you buy the garment, it matches your expectations. I think the worst thing would be if they like don't tell you it's one way or the other and you have wrong expectations. So it feels like both are valid as long as you kind of know what you're getting.
I think there's a difference between imperfections and something actually broken or, you know, a stitch completely coming out. You know, it's one thing is a visual, you know, does it just look a little bit wonky and, you know, a little bit imperfect. Another is, you know, a shirt seam coming apart or, you know, the fabric fraying or something like that. So it's a little bit of a fine line, but it's certainly kind of a more visual thing than as opposed to a quality thing.
Yeah, I think that's one thing where like there probably isn't any room for acceptability is around quality control. Like I like getting the vintage Oxford cloth shirts. And I've got one where like the sleeves are like an inch shorter than all the other ones. And like, that just makes me so angry because I didn't catch that right away, but I wore it and now I'm stuck with it. Or like, I know a couple of the brands in the denim space have had little mistakes here. They're usually the smaller brands will kind of make it right for you and fix a garment that got through QC that shouldn't have. But yeah, that's almost like the area where like there's no room for variability.
Oh, so this is from Fangdangle, pick from the bottom. Why does the inseam on raw denim have to be so long? I'm an average height and have to hem like 6 inches off every pair of pants I buy. It's one of the more important part of this hobby.
So taller people can wear them.
Oh, and really, shrink.
I mean, yeah, some will shrink if it's unsamferized. And then the other thing is, if you make a pair that is just, if you're only focusing on a waist size, it means a brand doesn't need to make as many pairs to cater for different sizes. Some brands will in the raw denim scene, so like Hyatt will to a certain extent, but a lot of them do it because ultimately it means that they can create a product that is usable for a lot of different people. It's a lot easier for someone to cut excess length off than it is adding length. So, I mean, there's probably also some kind of heritage aspect to it as well, as to why they do it, which Tom or Ilya or Lex will probably be able to pull out of the bag. But I mean, for me, I just see it as they're doing it because it's a sensible option that it means that they can just make a stock product.
Yeah, it's just for production reasons. It means the patterns, they'll go from like a 28 inch up to a 40 inch. So that's like 8 patterns. If then your time's in that and you've got to do a different inseam for each one, then you've got end up with like 30 plus patterns. Whereas otherwise you just have it long and then you hem it to size. And even brands like Black Horse Lane in the shop, they don't even hem the jeans until you buy it. So they hem it to your length and they'll just cut them all at a 36 inch inseam. So that's simply the reason why. It's just the easiest way to do it, which I guess if you're buying stuff online and it comes super long and you have to then go to your local tailor to get it hemmed, it's a bit annoying. But if you buy it in store, like any good store will have a union special where they'll just hem it to the correct length for you. So that would be the reason why, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to remember a lot of these brands are small. They are, you know, husband and wife brands or you know, just lone individuals themselves, even some of the bigger ones. So, you know, one we've mentioned a number of times here, Rogue Territory. Effectively, it's run by Carl and his wife, whose name eludes me. I apologize for that. Leslie, that's it, yeah. I can remember her Instagram handle. I couldn't remember her name. That shows how long I've been up. I mean, they're small brands. They don't have time to make lots of, you know, they can't really afford to make all these multiple patterns because they are all running on relatively small overheads and, you know, small profit margins. So, yeah, they've just got to, you know, they've made the decision that keeping the length at a standardized length is the best trade-off they can do to get a product out.
So there was a point before I kind of got into denim as a job for a while where I was like starting to do some garment design. And I was thinking a lot, maybe Lex, you might have a good solution here, but I was thinking a lot about how you might make a shirt sleeve that's unfinished, like a jean sleeve. So like you do the dart or whatever you want to call it, the part you button, but like you don't put a cuff. Instead, you have the, you do the placket, but you don't put a cuff on the shirt. Rather, you leave it unfinished. And then you basically do a chain stitch almost full circle around like the end of the shirt when you get the shirt purchased. I would love to explore something like that, because I find so often that, like, because I'm tall and skinny, shirts that fit me in the torso are just too short in the arms. And I just wish there was a better way to do that, you know?
It's possible, but it's slightly tricky, because generally on the placket, the button, actually this, my one shirt doesn't have a button. Generally, if it's one with a button, it will sit in the middle. So if you shorten or lengthen it, it changes the proportion slightly. And I've shortened a few shirts for Ilya. It's also, whereas hemming a pair of jeans you can do in 5 minutes, whereas to change a length on a shirt or to put the cuff onto a shirt, it's a bit trickier. So that kind of would take 20 minutes, half an hour. So it's not impossible, but it's just the sort of thing that's maybe not in just in a kind of shop setting that they could easily do. You can do it on scale. But
yeah. What if you got rid of the cuff and just had like a chore coat has just got like a jean hem instead and no cuff?
You need detachable cuffs. That's the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Also, having a shirt without a proper cuff, it doesn't quite look right. If you were to just have a placket and then just have it turned, it doesn't look finished properly. It looks like
a tube.
yeah, like someone's taking a shortcut. You kind of need that, you know, that kind of 2 inches of cuff on the wrist, just kind of to balance it.
Boy can dream.
Yeah. You might just need to get shorter arms.
God. Or put on some weight and just embrace a bigger size shirt. Cool. Should we jump into the discussion topic?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So this one's a pretty easy one, but I thought for today's discussion topic, it might be interesting to talk about why we love this hobby. So obviously we're all big denim head geeks and leather and workwear and rugged wear geeks, but it'd be interesting to kind of understand why for each of us, what makes this hobby something that we care so much about. Because I think that's not necessarily obvious when you see our pictures on Instagram or listen to the podcast. So would anyone like to kick off, or should I?
Go for it, mate.
Awesome. So for me, it's all about the evolution. Denim evolution, as our pal Rudy puts it. I really love the idea of buying something completely new, which I know is kind of against the whole notion of like vintage and looking after the planet. But no matter what it is in life, I love something that can start out looking beautiful and new and can patina over time and change. So that could be something like, you know, a pen, or like, you know, like a leather notebook, or a pair of jeans, or wax canvas, really anything that kind of tarnishes and changes and fades and gets beat up over time, such that it kind of captures my life story. That's really what does it for me. It's all about kind of taking something crisp and clean and perfect and embracing, I guess, like the wabi-sabi, like embracing the imperfections that develop. You know, like I dropped this water bottle and it's got dents and scratches on it now, but that's kind of cool. So I think for me, that's why I like indigo and leather goods.
I think I'm the same with you, David. Yeah, I got into it just because I wanted some better quality clothing in my wardrobe. And then, I got sucked in with the idea of everything evolving over time as it kind of fades and wears. And that was not helped by countless hours scrolling through Fade of the Day and Fade Friday on Heddles and its predecessor Raw Denim, which kind of properly sucked me in. And ever since then, I just love watching this stuff change over time. I'm the same. And also the fact that, you know, you're buying products that are extremely well made, and you know that they're going to last a lot longer. You know, for the most part, they are going to last longer. Yeah, you might get a crotch blowout, but
you can send that in and that can get fit, and you can, you know, the you know, like, your genes are tough enough to withstand getting repaired multiple times, whereas, you know, a lot of high street stuff, once it goes because it's so fine. So yeah, I like the fact that, you know, you can just wear it, you can beat it apart, you can keep it as smart as you like, and it's going to last you years.
So a follow-up question for you, Andy. Yep. I know myself, I've never really been able to get behind vintage. Mm. And even like secondhand stuff, I'll buy secondhand, like I bought a deck off Ilya, but yep. One thing that really resonated with me was the fact that it still was kind of like new, and it didn't have Ilya's fingerprint. It could have my fingerprint in it.
Yeah.
How are you in terms of vintage? Because for me, I just, something where someone else has already kind of beat it up and broke it in, it just doesn't resonate with me.
I think I'm with you definitely on jeans there. I think jeans is a big one. I don't really buy vintage. I could probably be more, I think I'd be more relaxed with say a denim jacket. Often because they are much slower, they go through a much slower process to, you know, develop their fades and the like. So you could own a jacket for years and it still look close to pristine. So I'd probably be more relaxed there, but yeah, on jeans, no, they need to be new or close to new.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think another thing that for me is a big reason why I love this as well is that it feels way more personal purchasing these kind of products. You know, we've talked about this before, but yeah, a lot of the brands are just like one man shows, or a little family, or, you know, brothers and sisters, you know, whatever. And this is something that the guys in the Denimheads podcast talked about as well. There's like, they was just blown away by the fact that they would message a brand like, I can't even remember who it was, but it was like someone like Full Count or one of those big Japanese brands. And they messaged him on Instagram and they actually messaged back. And he put his name underneath the message, the guy from the brand. And so he was like, okay, I'll have a look who the hell that is in that brand. It was actually the CEO of the brand that was responding to his messages, you know. That's something that's so cool, I think, as well. It's yeah, it just feels so personal, which is great. You know, you're able to create this bond and relationship with someone who produces something that you're equally passionate about, you know. That's something really cool.
I think that for me, that's a big thing that I've learnt and really enjoyed getting into this hobby, that you know, something that I wouldn't have appreciated before, but having a personal connection with a lot of these makers, and to just be able to talk to them about things and you know, build up friendships, or you know, just even as acquaintances, it's been really eye-opening, and it definitely makes you want to support the cause and support them and their journey on this whole thing. And yeah, it's, I mean, if you have the choice of buying something from a high street shop, which you don't know, you know, any personal connections there, versus someone who, you know, is making a garment for you, it's so much nicer when you know the people behind it. As for me, why I kind of enjoy this hobby, I think it's something that started with wanting to dress better and about being, you know, finding your own style, and also finding things which would last better. And jeans was one of those things that I started to look for when I wanted to dress better, because I'd lost weight and I wanted to buy something that would be, you know, a little bit nicer than what I would be able to find from the high street shops, which led me on to places like Reddit and Raw Denim and Heddles, and started that journey, which I'm still on, and I'm still enjoying discovering different things and different areas within the scene. Yeah, that was the biggest kicker.
I think you tapped onto something interesting there, Ilya, about kind of discovery and the fact that there is this like depth of information around the hobby that you can dig into.
Yeah, I think as guys, we like to, you know, to research things and look into things and, you know, find out why certain things developed in one way or another, and to dig deeper into it. And I just think I enjoy that process.
It is a bit.
You were saying something? Oops.
No, I was just going to say, there is always the risk that I think some people do get into this for what potentially could be seen the wrong reasons, especially linked to exclusivity. I've seen it on some of the, you know, the forums, people moaning when, you know, Elon Musk was seen wearing an Ironheart denim shirt, and it's articles were written about the shirt because, you know, compared to high street stuff, it is quite hard to find. It is quite rare. And then people moaning that because this article had been written in, you know, Gear Patrol or something like that, and Elon Musk was seen wearing a brand that's quite kind of quite revered within the scene, that everyone was going to buy it, and then they wouldn't wear it because they want to wear stuff purely because they look different. And I think if you're taking it, if you're going down this hobby for that route, for that reason, you need to reassess your priorities, and you need to think why you're really doing it, because, you know, it just seems like that's got the feel of, you know, someone who's, you know, been to 11 a reef, for an analogy, if people get it, or, you know, sometimes referred to, apologize for my language, but a twat of nine tails. You're just doing it to be different. You're just trying to one up people. Don't do that. We're not in this scene for that. That's we're not a hobby for that. You know, yeah, we're not in this.
Point.
Yeah. You know, because if you turn it up in the hobby like that, you're going to get ostracized, I think, because people just not want to hang out with you.
But I'd say most people, none of the guys that we know anyway, obviously, both online, but everyone we know, I think, is just in it because they love the clothes,
yeah,
love the heritage. And then it's kind of a good excuse to meet a load of cool guys. And, you know, we wouldn't be chatting now and having this podcast if it wasn't a love of denim.
It's effective. It's just, it's like people who, you know, it's just a weird offshoot. It's you know, it's akin to like people who, you know, join a rugby club and then are really in it more, you know, for the social side. Ultimately, we've got into it and actually we enjoy the social aspect to a much larger degree. It just happens to be that we're, you know, we wear clothes that we all like, and, you know, we're willing to spend, you know, maybe more than we would have if we were, you know, shopping from the high street.
Yeah, I guess this hobby too is always a great excuse for us to look at strange men's asses in public and not feel bad about it. I'm checking out the arguments, man.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah. That's a really interesting fade you've got there.
I get told off for it all the time.
What, by the by the guys or by your girlfriend?
Yeah, by my girlfriend. Yeah. But no, she has actually started pointing it out to me. Being like, that guy was just wearing selvage. So checking that guy out. Because let me check him out first.
I see you're into raw denim.
I did actually. I was on a holiday in down in Devon, and was just in like a little co-op or something. And it's this lady walking around in Momotaro jeans. Like, they're so easy to see. Like, it wasn't like a, and I was just like, oh, amazing jeans. Just, oh, yeah, you know, I'm really into, you know, start getting into this kind of like raw denim stuff. This is like my first pair of Japanese denim. And everyone's so kind of like, anyone you meet who has it is so kind of like hyped about it and just kind of wants to share information. Kind of like one of my main experiences kind of, the denim or raw denim heritage scene versus like say like the vintage scene is that the vintage scene is very like snooty, and it's like, you know, someone will post a suit and it's like, oh, but that's not a 1950s DB made in blah 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 blah, blah suit. Oh, that's terrible. You know, you just don't really very often get that in the heritage scene. You know, people have an appreciation for something, they show their appreciation on Instagram and stuff, and other people are hyped for your appreciation. I mean, like, kind of, I got into the scene through kind of being a bit of a history buff, working at Levi's and that kind of tying in. You know, my ideals of I want things to be as environmentally friendly as possible. I don't want to be buying into a corporate conglomerate who's not paying any taxes anywhere, and being made by, you know, children in Bangladesh or something. So
where did you work again?
What?
Where did you work again?
I work for an energy company now, so and we're renewable.
When you were working for Levi's, I think David's having a little dig there.
yeah, but I left.
Is this where we get sued by Levi's?
It's interesting because I think Tom, you hinted at something there, which is about like the democratization of this hobby, right? Like, because it's about what you do with a garment, almost like what you do with a blank canvas, you could buy a $500 pair of custom jeans from, you know, the best custom jeans maker, or you can buy like a $40 pair of Uniqlo's and make something great out of either or, right? So like that's quite cool that it doesn't matter how much money you have. It's not that you've got to like have a Corvette to be in the Corvette club, you know. It's just like you can buy any pair of jeans, any pair of boots, any pair of jacket and do something really cool with it and tell cool stories. And
yeah, absolutely.
I like that.
People get as hyped up for the new starter who has bought like, you know, a 30 quid pair of Uniqlo selvage and his fade progress as hyped as, you know, a guy with samurais, you know, kitted out in Wesco boots and all sorts. So, you know, there's just so much kind of positivity from the whole community as a whole. There are going to be exceptions. There's always exceptions in every community. It's the same for us who play with our little toy soldiers as a whole. Most people who play with toy soldiers are pretty sound. But there are those people there. Oh, okay, David's pulling a face. David disagrees. No, but you know, most people are, you know, if you post a picture of your latest paint bottle, it's like, yeah, that's really good. Have you tried doing this? Have you tried doing that? Instead of just being like, that is terrible. You know, if someone buys a pair of Uniqlo jeans, there might be one person who'd be like, oh, that's not true salvage. Is it even Zimbabwe cotton? But, you know, they are the exception to the rules.
And a bit of a shameless plug, but once we get the Worn Out Global meetups happening again in person, we definitely want folks of any level of interest in the hobby to show up. Even if you don't own a pair of Rothenham jeans and you're just kind of interested to learn more about it, please come hang out with us. Or if you're like the geekiest vintage collector or like, you know, indigo dyeing process nerd, you know, we really try and keep our physical meetups the same way. You know, they're open to everybody. Both genders too. Like, you know, it's called Sons of Selvage. It's not just like a dudes only thing. So yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. Anybody else want to share sort of why they're really into the hobby, or should we wrap it up there? Cool. All right. Well, let's probably go ahead and wrap things up for today. So I hope you enjoyed hearing a bit about why we all love denim, boots, heritage, rugged wear. And again, please rate or review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please follow us on Instagram at Sons of Selvage Podcast. And please message us with any questions, comments, feedback, etc. And sorry about the delay it took in getting this episode recorded, but hopefully we'll be back with you shortly again with a March episode and maybe some guests from our local community.
Awesome.
Au revoir.
Thanks, everybody. And thanks, guys, for jumping on and recording again today, and speak to you all shortly.
Oh, yeah.
Done, Daniel. Cool.
Yeah. Thanks, see everybody. You guys. Cheers. Bye.